This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 657 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombarded areas across Gaza this week, killing 646 Palestinians and injuring more than 3,400 between July 16th and July 23rd, according to records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. On July 22nd, 15 Palestinians were killed and 50 were wounded when Israel targeted tents of displaced families in the Beach or Shati refugee camp west of Gaza City. The same day, another 15 Palestinians were killed, including 6 children, in an airstrike on a residential building in Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. The United Nations says that paramedics were also injured in that attack and that at least one ambulance was damaged as the residential building was located near an ambulance station. On July 21st, Israel bombed a kindergarten in the Burej refugee camp in central Gaza in 2 successive strikes. Images and video show small children streaming out of the classrooms with their backpacks on, their faces bloodied and terrified, being comforted by parents, teachers, and caregivers. Just a few days before, Israel bombed the Abu Helu school shelter in the Burej refugee camp. These attacks happened during a ground invasion of central Gaza this past week. On July 20th, according to a statement by the World Food Program, or WFP, their 25-truck convoy carrying vital food assistance crossed Zikim Crossing in northern Gaza and subsequently encountered large crowds of civilians anxiously waiting to access desperately needed food supplies. Quote, as the convoy approached, the surrounding crowd came under fire from Israeli tanks, snipers, and other gunfire, resulting in mass casualties, the WFP stated. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that 73 people had been killed and more than 150 were injured in the attack, some in critical condition. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, stated that most of the injuries were in the head or chest and that the hospital was overwhelmed with the influx of casualties. Based on available reports, this appears to be the highest number of fatalities among Palestinians seeking food in a single location and on a single day since May 27th, the WFP stated. Forced displacement continues across Gaza, with the Israeli army squeezing Palestinians into smaller and smaller areas. A displacement order on Sunday, July 20th, covered 4 neighborhoods and nearly 6 square kilometers of Deir el-Balah. The UN said that their initial estimates indicate that between 50,000 and 80,000 people were in the area at the time the order was issued, including some 30,000 people sheltering in 57 displacement sites. At least 1,000 families had already fled the area. The newly designated displacement area includes several humanitarian warehouses, 4 primary health clinics, 4 medical points, and critical water infrastructure, the Southern Gaza Desalination Plant, 3 water wells, 1 water reservoir, 1 solid waste dumping site, and 1 wastewater pumping station. Any damage to this infrastructure will have life-threatening consequences, the UN added. With this latest order, the area of Gaza under displacement orders or within Israeli militarized zones has risen to 88%, leaving 2.1 million civilians squeezed into a fragmented 12% of the strip, where essential services have collapsed. The new order cuts through Deir el-Balah all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, further splintering the strip. It will limit the ability of the UN and our partners to move safely and effectively within Gaza, choking humanitarian access when it is needed most, the UN stated. In addition to relentless attacks on school shelters, homes, and buildings, services have stopped at 6 health facilities in the Gaza Strip, due to a fuel shortage because of Israel's continued closure of the crossings since March. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza described the ongoing obstruction of fuel and medical supplies as, quote, a deliberate attempt to destroy what remains of the health system. The United Nations says that hospitals in Gaza, quote, are overwhelmed and cannot cope with the influx of patients due to the lack of supplies and fuel. Local health authorities said that in the past few days, several of their health facilities have shut down due to the lack of fuel. More hospitals, including Al-Shifa, are at imminent risk of shutting down within the next few days. Israel's ongoing ban on fuel into Gaza has forced the main desalination plant in Gaza City to shut down. The Gaza municipality warned that the city has entered a phase of extreme thirst due to the lack of fuel to run the plant. In a statement, the municipality said that the worsening fuel crisis has further deepened the water shortage. Large areas are no longer receiving water, and most wells are out of service. Some 1.2 million displaced people and residents now face the threat of severe thirst as water sources collapse and urgent humanitarian intervention remains absent, the municipality stated. The Samir Project, a mutual aid organization in Gaza, warned that the drivers of the water distribution trucks they work with said that they are running out of gas and that, quote, in a week or two, mutual aid groups won't be able to deliver water trucks to people anymore. Israel's starvation of Gaza has hit catastrophic levels. Palestinians are reporting that there simply is no more food left, with markets empty and stockpiles depleted. Reporter Nahed Hajjaj posted on Friday, July 18th, quote, do not be surprised when we journalists stop covering news here. I swear by God that today I could not get up from the hunger. There is no food. Even if someone has money, there is nothing in the market to even purchase. We are all starving. We are all dying. On Sunday, July 20th, the Palestinian Health Ministry held a protest of sirens in what they say was an urgent warning and an alarm toward the deteriorating starvation and health situation in the besieged strip. Quote, our sirens today are the voice of the hungry and the bereaved who are left to die without the minimum means of survival, the ministry said. That was on July 20th. That day, the health ministry said that it had recorded 86 deaths from starvation, 76 children and 10 adults, what it is calling a silent massacre. The number has since risen to at least 101 as of Tuesday. Al Jazeera journalist Anas Al-Sharif broke down in tears describing the scene outside of a hospital on Sunday, where people were collapsing in hunger and others were being brought to the hospital with injuries from Israeli attacks. That was Anas Al-Sharif. He appealed to all international press freedom and human rights organizations on Wednesday over renewed threats against him by the Israeli military. He said, quote, I reaffirm that I, Anas Al-Sharif, am a journalist with no political affiliations. My only mission is to report the truth from the ground, as it is, without bias. At a time when a deadly famine is ravaging Gaza, speaking the truth has become, in the eyes of the occupation, a threat. A group of journalists announced that they were going on hunger strike and would just be consuming salt water in protest of Israel's mass starvation policy and the deteriorating situation across Gaza. Our contributor Abubakar Abed wrote, quote, I had always been next to those journalists at Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah. Seeing them drinking salted water has ripped my heart into pieces. There's no way this world can ever be forgiven. The group of journalists declared that, quote, we are on an open hunger strike until the smallest child in Gaza can eat. The reporters called on, quote, the free people of the world to stand up and participate in the empty stomach movement for the oppressed, the hungry, and the thirsty in the Gaza Strip. Members of Gaza's civil defense joined the hunger strike as well. Mahmoud Bassel, the civil defense spokesperson, said, quote, "The main reason that pushed me to go on a hunger strike is that I see children who cannot eat. I see men, women, patients who cannot feed themselves. The sick are unable to feed themselves," he said, adding that more than 1,000 people have been killed while looking for food, and 85 children have starved to death. "We are living a daily catastrophe. People are falling to the ground. They faint out of exhaustion, out of hunger, out of starvation," he added. "As long as aid does not enter for the citizens here in a humane manner, I continue to call upon and appeal to the world," Bassel said in a post on social media. Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis stated that 15 more Palestinians died from starvation on Tuesday, bringing the total number to 101, including 80 children. The toll of martyrs due to hunger and malnutrition is increasing rapidly, the hospital said. Dr. Amberin Salimi, an American doctor working inside the hospital, described the conditions in Gaza as catastrophic. "Everything here is extremely cruel," she said. "No food, no medicine, no shelter, no safety. Everything is lost under siege and a genocide war." 3-month-old Yahya al-Najjar died due to starvation this week, the third infant to be killed by Israel's starvation in a 24-hour period, according to journalist Ahmed Al-Najjar. Israel continues to deliberately and systematically prevent the entry of baby formula and specialized nutritional supplements for infants. Dr. Fida Al-Nadi at Nasser Medical Complex spoke to reporters about the death of babies from starvation.
Dr. at Nasser Medical Hospital, the last hospital working in the South Gaza, we lost a child, Yahya Najjar, who is 3 months old infant. We have lost him because of lack of nutrition, and he has no milk, and his mother could not afford breastfeeding for him. So we have lost him, and like all other children in Gaza. And the most vulnerable period is during the infancy, and early infancy is most vulnerable. Every day here in Nasser Medical Hospital, we lost children. Every day we lose from 1 to 2 cases of children, especially infants, due to malnutrition. And of course, it affects all aspects of their life. It affects immunity and makes them more vulnerable to infections and may die to infection. During the previous months, we have lost more than 73 cases of children due to malnutrition, and this number is increasing every day.
That was Dr. Fida Al-Nadi at Nasser Medical Complex. The Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention stated on Monday that it was calling on every leader in the world, quote, to step in immediately with measures that ensure food and water gets into Gaza right now. No more discussions, meetings, reports, sessions, summits, the institute said. Get food and water into Gaza now. Quote, even if it takes bypassing the reports, meetings, endless conferences, parliamentary sessions, UN sessions, and all the other regular diplomatic channels that have led nowhere, just do it. Reporter Wadia Abu Al-Saud covered a protest of children in the streets on July 19th. Marching with empty stomachs and chanting no to hunger, no to death. They came out to the streets not to play, rather to scream out of hunger, Abu al-Saud says. Their bellies are empty and their eyes are looking for a bite, for mercy, for a homeland whose children are not starving. Meanwhile, Israeli and American forces stationed at the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians every day, while preventing the United Nations and its partner organizations from distributing life-saving food aid with dignity and safety, as thousands of tons of food remain blocked on the other side of the Israeli crossings. On Sunday, July 20th, Israeli forces killed at least 92 Palestinians who tried to obtain meager parcels of flour and food aid in what Euromed Human Rights Monitor described as one of the most heinous massacres against starving civilians. Quote, the occupation army ordered the civilians to approach aid trucks with their hands raised, a clear sign of surrender, and then opened fire on them without provocation, the rights group said, adding that thousands of desperate civilians, driven by days of total flour shortages, headed early on Sunday to the Al-Waha area in northwest Gaza City after reports circulated that flour-laden trucks had entered via the Zikim crossing. In a desperate attempt to feed their families, many individuals rushed to the site. When the first groups arrived, Israeli tanks were already stationed in the area. Soldiers then used loudspeakers to command, raise your hands and walk in front of the tanks. Those who want flour, come forward. Around 200 civilians complied. As they neared the aid trucks, Israeli forces suddenly opened heavy fire directly at their heads, instantly killing dozens. Others were left crawling, wounded, and bleeding. In a separate incident also on July 20th, Euromed said, quote, Israeli forces shot and killed six more starving civilians near a food distribution point run by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in Rafah as people attempted to access aid. On Wednesday, the Palestinian Health Ministry stated that 34 Palestinians were killed and more than 640 injured between Tuesday and Wednesday at these so-called aid distribution sites, raising the death toll to 1,060, with more than 7,200 injured since the GHF opened 8 weeks ago in late May. Dr. Nick Maynard, a British surgeon working in Gaza, told the BBC that based on the injuries he's treating, Israeli soldiers in Gaza are reportedly turning the targeting of Palestinian children into a systematic human hunting game.
I've seen, I think, probably a dozen now seriously injured young boys who have been shot in the abdomen or the chest. One of them, a 12-year-old, died on the operating table because the injuries were so severe. And they're all from gunshot wounds. And they all described to me, and their families described to me, and indeed colleagues of mine, Gazan medical colleagues who are looking for food as well, have gone to these same distribution sites and witnessed these injuries as well. They're all describing that they're being shot by Israeli soldiers or by the quadcopters, the drones which are being remotely controlled by the Israelis, and fire often indiscriminately, often targeted. And I'm seeing a very clear, we're all seeing a very clear pattern of injuries. I've seen the abdominal injuries, but my colleagues in the emergency room describe a very clear pattern where on particular days they'll see different body parts targeted. So on one day, they'll all be abdominal gunshot wounds. On another day, they'll all be head gunshot wounds or neck gunshot wounds. On another day, they'll be arm or leg gunshot wounds. And on last Saturday, there were four young teenage boys all brought in very, very rapidly in succession with gunshot wounds to their testicles. So they'd clearly been targeted to their testicles. And this is a pattern that we're seeing every day, that these young teenage boys are systematically being targeted. And it's almost as if a game is being played, that they're deciding to shoot the head today and the neck tomorrow and the testicles the day after.
That was Dr. Nick Maynard working in Gaza. Meanwhile, an American mercenary who had worked for the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation admitted in an interview with Israel's Channel 12 this week that, quote, the aid centers treated the population very badly and put them in danger. The GHF system, quote, can't be fixed. It has to be put an end to, adding that if the UN had the resources and coordination that this mechanism has, it would work much better. The mercenary who recently resigned said that, quote, once Palestinians finished collecting the aid at the site, the American guards opened fire, shooting at them, at their legs, at the dirt mounds to force them to leave. He also described an incident where a GHF member of staff threw a stun grenade directly at a Palestinian woman who collapsed and fell to the floor. That was the moment I realized I couldn't go on, he said. In response to the confession, the Gaza government media office said on Wednesday that those statements, quote, represent damning testimony to the criminal and inhumane nature of this organization, which hides behind the guise of relief work while actually playing a security and military role in areas of forced displacement, subject to clear intelligence and security agendas. And if people managed to survive the GHF killing fields, the food parcels from the private U.S.-Israeli mercenary corporation continue to be wholly insufficient for people's critical needs. Dr. Ahmad Al-Fara, the director of pediatrics at Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, said that Palestinian families have come to the hospital suffering from serious health problems linked to consuming spoiled food. Dr. Al-Fara told Al Jazeera that he asked two parents, quote, didn't you smell the foul odor of the can of food that you ate? The father said, doctor, what can we do? This is all we have. Al-Fara said that he wouldn't send his son to the GHF sites. Quote, I am afraid that he will go there and he will come back as a dead body. The GHF is a trap for killing, not for distributing food, he said. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed three Palestinian children this week. On July 18th, 13-year-old Amr Ali Ahmed Kabha was shot in the back at least seven times by Israeli soldiers in Yabad, near Jenin in the north. Defense for Children International Palestine reports that two Israeli military vehicles came from the Mevo Dotan settlement and military base, entered the village and took up positions in its northern area, where several soldiers exited their vehicles. Amr was walking around a road nearby, and he unknowingly approached the group of Israeli soldiers stationed at the site. Due to the circular bend in the road, the soldiers did not initially see him, nor was he aware of their presence. As Amr turned back and attempted to take cover, the soldiers opened fire on him with live ammunition from a distance of 10 meters, or about 33 feet away, and he was struck with around seven bullets. Three bullets in the back, one in the neck, one in the abdomen, one in the upper right thigh, and one in the groin. Amr fell to the ground as Israeli soldiers advanced toward him, preventing anyone from reaching him, including medical staff and ambulance teams. As news of Amr's injury quickly spread in the village, his father rushed directly to the scene. Despite the soldiers' shouting and warning shots, he managed to reach and embrace Amr. According to the father, Amr was still alive at that time, using hand gestures to plead for medical help as he was unable to speak. Israeli soldiers handcuffed the father behind his back, severely beat him, and was forced to sit beside his bleeding child. The soldiers continued to detain both father and son, blocking ambulance access for approximately 40 minutes. Only after the soldiers were certain Amr had died, they allowed the ambulance to approach and transport him to the Yabad Government Emergency Center and then transferred to Jenin Government Hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. Defense for Children International Palestine reported on Tuesday, July 22nd, that another boy, 15-year-old Ibrahim Majid Ali Nasser, was shot and killed by Israeli forces in the Palestinian town of Kabatia, south of Jenin. Ibrahim was allegedly throwing stones at Israeli soldiers during an Israeli military incursion into Kabatia, where he was shot from a distance of about 10 to 15 meters, or about 30 to 50 feet, away, striking him with a bullet in the right side of the chest that exited through the right shoulder. And on Wednesday, Israeli forces shot and killed 14-year-old Ibrahim Imad Ahmed Mahmoud Hamran Araba, south of Jenin, killing him instantly. He is the 35th child to be shot and killed by Israeli forces in 2025. According to statistics from Defense for Children International. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight The Dreams We Carry During Genocide by Assem Al-Nabi, writing from Gaza. He's an engineer, a PhD researcher, and the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality. Assem writes, quote, I'm not sure if I made a mistake promising my nieces and nephews something sweet in the middle of a famine. I searched Gaza City for days before I finally found a single bar of chocolate, hidden like a treasure in the ruins of this old city. I paid an outrageous price and brought it back, breaking it into 7 tiny pieces for the children, giving none to the adults. As each child took a piece, I imagined its sweetness on my tongue, wishing there had been more for the kids. A few minutes later, my beautiful 5-year-old niece, Lana, said quietly, "Uncle Asim, do you know my dream?" I answered with curiosity, "Please tell me, Lana." "My dream is to have a whole bar of chocolate," little Lana said. For a moment, I couldn't respond. How has chocolate become a dream for a child in the 21st century? Why is it impossible to grant even this small wish? That moment stayed with me. And then I eventually realized Israel is the reason we and our children cannot fulfill even the simplest dreams. Not poverty, not fate, but occupation, siege, and war. Israel. That moment reminded me of another day during the genocide. I was standing on the street when I overheard children talking about their dreams, their small and innocent hopes if they survived. Some wanted to see their martyred siblings again. Others dreamed of eating hot bread or chicken. One little girl said she wished for running water in her bathroom so she wouldn't have to carry heavy buckets over long distances. All of these were basic human rights, things no child should have to wish for. But the voice that really hit me was from a little blonde boy who whispered, "I just want to hear my mother's voice calling me in the morning for school. That's my dream." I knelt beside him and asked gently, "Is that really your biggest dream, buddy?" He nodded and said, "It's an impossible dream. My school was destroyed and my mother was killed." I didn't know what to say until one of the children asked me, "Uncle, what's your dream?" I paused only for a second before replying, "My dream is for all your dreams to come true." Those are excerpts from The Dreams We Carry During Genocide by Asim al-Nabi, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. Photographer Hanin Salem captured an image of 4 young boys in Gaza City, taking a rest after playing. 2 of them have their rollerblades on and they smile for the camera. Hanin Salem says, quote, "As a photographer in Gaza, I constantly search for the life that insists on being born amidst all this death around me. My lens doesn't just capture destruction, it seeks out the flickers of humanity in the shadows. The child who survives the rubble with a smile, the laughter that hides behind the dust of bombed homes. In every corner of ash, there's a child turning debris into a playground and an old bicycle into wings that fly him beyond the siege. They may not speak the language of philosophy, but they live its most complex truths with their bare feet, walking over shattered ground as if the earth hadn't bled, laughing in ways that defy the sorrow trying to nest in their hearts. In a single moment, destruction becomes the background, fear turns into a fading shadow, and life becomes a rusted bicycle ridden by a child who refuses to stop, as if teaching the world a lesson in survival. I asked one of them, "Why do you play here?" He smiled and said, "So we can laugh before the bombing starts again." As if they know laughter is resistance, and that childhood, if not lived in its time, is buried with the first airstrike. That's from photographer Hanin Salem. You can find more of her exquisite photographs on her Instagram account at hanin.maher.salem. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.